Shalom. We're in Piska Mem Dalad 44 in Rav Kook's commentary on Inaya, Masechet Shabbat, Chapter 2. And what we're going to see tonight is a very interesting example of Rav Kook as a commentator. Rav Kook has a lot of chidushim on psukim throughout the Tanakh. And I know that they started gathering them. The problem is to turn big ideas, which are based on innovative ways of saying psukim, into short, you know, Rashi-like. It's a challenge to do it. What we're going to see today is something that I'm sure always bothered all of you. In the Shir Shel Hayom that we're discussing, the psalm that we say on Yomei Rishon, on Sundays, it seems pretty repetitive, right? Miuza melech hakavod, miuza melech hakavod, Hashem ziluz v'gibor, Hashem gibor melech ma'o, su sharim rashechem, usu pitche olam, v'inasu pitche olam. It's like the same pasuk mentioned twice, but there are three small differences, and Rav Kook ingeniously sees the common denominator between the three differences of the second Su'u Sha'arim as opposed to the first Su'u Sha'arim. Just a quick reminder, Shlomo HaMelech is bringing, he wants to bring the Aron Hashem, the Holy Ark, into the Beit HaMikdash, into the Holy Temple, which he had just built, and the gates stay closed, they don't open up. And he says, Su'u Sha'arim Rashechem, gates, open up, V'hinasu Pitchei Olam. And later on it says, Usu'u pitchei olam. A little literal translative difference would be, Vehinasu is, you will be raised. And as opposed to Usu'u, and you will raise. The first is more mi'ulatz, it's more artificial, externally dictated, and the second is su, you yourselves will decide through your free will to open up your gates.
Like passive versus active?
Passive versus active. The first one is passive, someone will open up your gates, and the second is active, the gates themselves will open up. Usu pitchei olam, the opening to the world. And again, this is a phrase which we say so often in davening, and it just passes us by. What does it mean, the gates to the world? V'yavu melech hakavod, and the honorable king will come. Mihu ze melech hakavod. Here's the second major difference. In the first pasuk, it says, mi ze melech hakavod, right? Who is the honorable king? In the second pasuk, which we're going to be dealing with, it says, who is he, the king? Which in Hebrew it works out, in English it sounds a little off, but both are possible. The question is, what's the difference? And the third difference is, Hashem Tzvaot hu melech hakavod tzela. The God of hosts is only mentioned in the second pasuk, and not in the first pasuk. So again, the three differences between the two psukim, vehinasu as opposed to usu'u, mi zemelech as opposed to mi hu zemelech, and Hashem izuz v'gibor, the God of strength, as opposed to Hashem tzvaot, the God of hosts. And everything else is basically identical. So if you have two psukim which are identical with three differences, obviously those three differences are very significant. And the question is, what is the significance? And it really, you need someone like Rav Kook, who has these big tahalichim, these big thought processes, to cover all three differences, and we'll see a beautiful, beautiful commentary. And it's connected with what we've been discussing about Jewish nationalism and the role of the Jewish people as a light to the nations. Chazar ve'amar su'u sha'arim roshechem. So, once again, Shlomo returned, and he said a second time, open the gates, usu'u, instead of hinasu, pitchei olam, mi hu ze melech hakavod, as opposed to Mizeh, Hashem Tzvakot, Umelech HaKavod Zela. Kasher nifsol et derech ha-hovala el ha-shlama ha-klalit. When we decide to lifsol, how would you say, to disqualify the previous way that we spoke about. If you remember, last time we started speaking about, Rav Kook writes, about the two ways of influencing the world. One is through force, through an army, through, I don't know about coercion, but through strength. And the other is through a more natural, peaceful means. And as we said last time, Rav Kook prefers, as I'm sure we would all prefer, the more peaceful way. As he writes in his letter to the JNF, the Jewish National Fund, we would like to acquire the land of Israel with money, buy it from the Arabs. And it was the Arabs who blew it, right, when they decided at some point to give a death penalty to anybody who sells their land to Jews. So we really had no choice. And then when they attacked, we really had no choice but to defend ourselves and attack back. And that's how we almost doubled the size of the small state of Israel already in the War of Independence, more than tripled it in the War of the Six-Day War. And every time they attack us, and we defend ourselves significantly, we end up doubling or tripling the land of Israel. But it's really the Arabs who are calling the shots. They're the ones who force us to do it by force. We would prefer to have the land and acquire the land by peaceful means. So Rav Kook says, if we really disqualify or prefer not to do the forceful way, hovale lashlama klalit, to bring the world to its completeness, hayotzet mi makor Yisrael, through explicitly the source of Israel, la'ir la'olam kulo ulamim rabim, im tiye b'derech rash v'sa'arat milchama. Right? In the end, the light of God, the light of morality and idealism and Israel is going to shine in the world. The question is, how much is it going to come through Jewish nationalism? And how much are the nations going to be able to get there on their own without Jewish nationalism? So he says, if we have to do it through Jewish nationalism, through that, the sa'arot, the noise, and the winds of war, bo'ra'at izuz v'gibor milchama. That was the previous pasuk, where Hashem is called the God of strength, the God of war. That was the first approach, which we already said is, sometimes it's necessary, but it is less preferred. Nish'ar lefanenu rak she'taseh kedusha elokit hamitpashetet mi'oran shel Yisrael et darkah benachat. If we disqualify the first way and say that we prefer a more peaceful way, then the way to do it is through nachat, through patience. Bimetinut, through tolerance. Bitsa'adim itim, and this is a much more slower process. So here we have a sort of a problem, because on the one hand, we all want the Mashiach now, and we want the Geula. And this is something we spoke about before, I won't elaborate on it. Rav Kook, obviously he believes in Mashiach ben David, but that is really a side point. The major point is not Mr. Mashiach. It's getting the world and getting ourselves and getting Am Yisrael to a level that we are complete, that we are godly, that we're idealistic. And whether Mr. Mashiach comes here or here, right, according to Chazal, I think we said in Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin, Mashiach ben David comes at the last stage, right? That's a very a minor part of Yemot HaMashiach. And here, by the way, if you speak to, I don't know Chabad ideology itself, I just know Chabadniks, they, a lot of times they talk about Mashiach, 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 and they're pretty fixated on Mr. Mashiach, whether it's the Rebbe, whether it's the fourth Rebbe, after the Rebbe, whoever it is, Mr. Like we were also in elementary school, right? We thought the Mashiach, the whole Chidush is Mr. Mashiach. And if you learn the sources, and if you learn, most of the Nevi'im Achronim really don't make a big deal about Mr. Mashiach. They make a big deal about the national redemption of Israel returning to the land. The Nevi'im make a big deal, the prophets make a big deal about the universal peace. universal understanding. Mr. Mashiach is part of the picture, but that, as, and we'll see it here also, it's really a side point, and it comes at the end of the process, because if this Mr. Mashiach were to come out of nowhere and we wouldn't be ready for him, then it wouldn't make any sense. And that's why God doesn't send him till we're ready. Vine. So we're talking about getting there in the slow, patient way.
Sorry, but also to mention that Rav Kook came from a family of Chabadnikim, so it's in his way of thinking also.
That's very interesting. I mentioned when I said that I don't know Chabad ideology, I don't know really the Lubavitcher Rebbe. There is a lot of Chabad, original Chabad, in the writings of Rav Kook. And there he does talk a lot about the natural process of Geula, the rational, logical process of redemption. Okay. Hine yesh hevdel ben ela hadrachim hashnaim b'yichusam shel pitchei olam el hashe'arim. Here Rav Kook is very beautifully explaining the word pitchei olam is the opening up of the godly Torah and the godly light to bring it to mankind. How are we going to open the petach to the olam, the opening to mankind as a whole, to the non-Jews? So these two psukim show the two ways. The first way, as we said before, is through the Jewish nationalism, where we climb and we return to the land, and it's our culture, and we will influence the world directly through Jewish culture, through Israeli culture. But now we're talking about the second pasuk, to bring the pitchei olam, not through vehinasu, which is more, we are the active ones and the world is passive, but through usu, where they themselves are more active, where the goyim are playing a more active role. And Jewish nationalism, it's not non-existent, but it plays less of a role in the second type of geula. By the way, in both types of geula that he's referring to, it's not one is supernatural as opposed to natural. We're talking about both are natural talichim. He's not talking about be'ita as opposed to achishena, right? For those of you, I'm sure you're all familiar. He's talking about within the natural geula, how much is the role of Jewish nationalism going to play? Is it going to be a super role of Hashem Izuz v'Gibor? Or is it going to be a more international, universal, that where the goyim are going to get to these godly ideals through their nationalism and their culture and through secular means? Now, maybe I'll already point out, what are the disadvantages of us teaching the world Torah as opposed to them getting to these ideals, godly ideals, on their own? Let's think together for a minute. It's all logical, Rav Kook is going to say, but let's think, what are the advantages of having the goyim get to these ideals on their own, as opposed to us, like, not forcing them out of coercion, but, you know, us pulling them, schlepping them along? What would be the advantage?
Well, I guess an issue of to what extent they feel that it's a natural part of them, as opposed to, you know, just somebody else's foreign influence.
Yafe. So that is, Rav Kook explains, the difference between vihinasu and usu. Whether the goyim, if they see it as their yozma, as their active partners, their initiative, then they'll participate that much more, and they'll give us less problems. There'll be that much less anti-Semitism, and, you know, they'll go along. What else?
It's a much shorter process.
A shorter? Why? Yeah.
Because they're coming to it from their own interest. Then we save ourselves all the effort of trying to convince them that it's the right dera.
Okay, here Davka Rav Kook goes in the opposite direction, where he says that if we force them, as if it were, to do it, we reveal all the light to them, then they'll get there quicker. On the other hand, the second approach, Davka, is more slow and more patient, where they'll get there through, with our help, but through their own rational thinking. And it's also, there's a big advantage, you know, we all know this from children, right? As soon as you tell a child, especially an adolescent, something, his first reaction is to do the opposite. And I think we all are that way to a certain extent. We don't like anybody telling us what to do. Somebody told me, started explaining to me, then we got cut off of the psychological ramifications of whether in ways, you know, you can choose to have a man's voice or a woman's voice. And men don't like being told by other men what to do. You know, there are different advantages of the different. Nobody likes being told what to do. So that's a second disadvantage if they're going to feel that we're schlepping them, okay? It's a little artificial. And also another advantage of having the goyim do it at their pace is that it's done through their language, through their culture. We spoke about this once, that talis and tefillin and lulavim and etrogim, that doesn't interest the goyim. It's never going to interest the goyim. And, right, when we spoke about the Rav Kook writes about how Jewish culture and all those Jewish movie producers and Jewish songwriters and Jewish fashion designers are going to be influencing the world through culture from Yerushalayim and not from Hollywood, we pointed out that it's not going to be through movies like Ushpizin or Jewish movies like Schindler's List or things like that, because, yeah, Schindler's List is important to educate the world about the Holocaust, but movies about Etrogim, that doesn't catch them. Talk to the goy in their language, right? In their culture, and not necessarily through Jewish bifocals. Yeah.
We're talking about this whole thing, the concept that we're talking about here, about the goy coming to a cultural process of coming closer to the ideal. Right?
Yeah.
Could we have maybe one or two just very concrete examples of what kind of philosophical changes we're talking about among the goyim?
The Shlosh Esrei Midot. The idea of Rachum, Chanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, the 13 traits of godliness, that's what we want to be the world culture. Rather than having movies about violence, there will be movies about tzedek, of helping people. And like there used to be, you know, helping the underdog, you know, like Superman or things like that. Doesn't have to be science fiction, but tzedek, justice, how good it is to be faithful to your spouse, not to cheat on your spouse, as is often the case today.
So it would seem to me that, I mean, if I look at the past, say, 200-300 years in the goyish part of the Western world, it seems like there was, for a couple hundred years, a gradual improvement in the general philosophical outlook of the goyim in the Western world. A lot of these concepts seem to have increased a lot over that period of time, and I would say the last 40 or 50 years have seen a very rapid decline in all of those features. Now, I guess one could say that it's up and down with a general upwards climb, but I'm not sure I necessarily believe that. It doesn't seem to me that this is just a little dip towards further upwards. It seems like it's a decline, real decline.
Yeah, real declines are real declines. That the general direction of the improvement of mankind, like we said before, we've said many times about comparing the world as compared to a world of chauvinism and imperialism and slavery and racism and all that, there definitely is an improvement. It's a very observant comment that you said, that the world was on their way. If you look at movies from the 30s, the 40s, maybe the early 50s, those are pretty Jewish concepts. By the way, it doesn't have to be simplistic or naive. It doesn't have to be, you can deal, and we should be dealing, you know, there should be children's movies and also adult movies. And adult movies is not a difference of how much sex there is or violence there is, but how complex the message is. Little children are not built for complex messages. And my educated guess is that the dip in Hollywood over the last couple of decades is a preparation for deeper, more complex issues.
I'm not just talking about Hollywood. I'm talking about the society in general.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Everything.
That's what I'm talking about. The fact, just look at Israeli society, where we know, here we know the statistics. If 17% of the adult Jews in Israel are Balei Tshuva, that's a very, very significant phenomena. Because the fact that people want to become less religious, right, and eat cheeseburgers and do whatever they feel like doing, that is to be like 99% of the world. That's normal. On the other hand, to accept upon yourself self-discipline and higher ideals, that is definitely going on. Of course, we'd like it to go on at a faster rate, but it's definitely taking place. And I'm sure that Am Yisrael isn't alone in this. You know, when you hear about, I don't know, Madonna and Hillary Clinton learning Kabbalah, things like that, you know, that means that the goyim are also they're looking for something deeper. One of the issues that we're going to see very soon, Rav Kook says one of the disadvantages, and this again is Rav Kook, classic Rav Kook, there's this advantage and there's that advantage, and both sides of the coin are important, the synthesis and antithesis and synthesis. Apparently the world is going in both directions. In other words, the secular world and the non-Jewish world is, like you said, clearly advancing over the last century or two centuries, but Jewish nationalism, we see, is playing a key role in the Geula. Because apparently, because of what you said, you know, Hollywood's been going down already for 40, 50 years, right? They're not getting back on their feet idealistically. And I'm not just talking about Hollywood. That's, you know, one expression of it. We're talking in general. Look at, you know, the non-Jewish music and Bichlal culture and values and self-centeredness, etc. The world apparently needs a little more push from us than we would like. And part of the disadvantage of doing it through of having the goyim do it on their own is that the name of God of Israel plays a lesser role. The Tanakh plays a lesser role. And that's what we've been seeing, that the world is going in the direction of, they call it religion without God. Right? People want to volunteer and they want to get involved more and more, but they're not interested in old-fashioned going to church and you know, old-fashioned religion. And God is less of a part of it, and the Tanakh is less of a part of it, and the people of Israel is less of a part of it. I just published an article recently on, I think I mentioned it once, that I got a grant to write about the issue of what to learn with children in Tanakh. You know, should we skip those tsanua, how do you say tsanua?
The immodest
chapters in the Torah. How should they teach them? Should you teach them in general without details? And the answer is chad mashma'i chazal, and the halacha is not to skip anything. Well, according to the age, you go into details and what not to go, but definitely not skip anything. And I have a chapter there on Christian Bible education, and I was amazed how little they respect the Tanakh. I always thought, you know, the Bible belters, they're really into the Tanakh. They are really into what they call the New Testament. But the Old Testament, they're pretty embarrassed about it. They're embarrassed that the people of Israel are so central, and that you have all of these, you know, people who they call shady characters, you know, we are embarrassed of what David HaMelech did here, and Avram did here, and Sarah did there, and they're always embarrassed about the Old Testament, and that's why the preachers really try and skip over it. And I was very surprised about that. Also, the fact that the children, most, there's an unbelievable number, something like 90% of the Bible education, of those who do learn Bible, is from what they call children's Bibles. It's not the text itself. It is, you know, the story in Noah. You see animals going in two by two, everyone is happy and jolly, and, you know, Noah is a nice guy, everyone's always smiling, and they don't mention the fact that the world is dying, and that it was because of Hamas, and, you know, a lot of, it's really totally naive. And my educated guess is, and obviously those who are anti-Bible, they play this up, and those who are pro-Bible play it down. But my guess is one of the reasons why a lot of people are not interested in Christianity as a religion is because they really sell it as something so naive and childish. And not only that, they skip over most of it. And the way And it's not surprising because they're not mechuyav to the Bible. The fact that every denomination has different number, I'm talking about what they call the Old Testament. Sometimes there are 30 books, sometimes there are 40 books, sometimes 50. I think the Greek Orthodox or Ethiopian Orthodox, one has up to 65 books in the Old Testament. In other words, what's holy and what's not holy, it's totally open. Nothing's really holy. It's like nothing is really canonized. The words, also when I get questions on Atar Yeshivat Beit El, people ask Goyim, a lot of they ask about Bible questions. They are so ignorant because the whole idea that there is one text and they say, well, which is correct? Because we see this, they don't call it translation. They think it's like different editions of the Bible. They don't really, you know, the whole idea that there is one text that hasn't changed and it's the same whether you're in the Ashkenaz or Yemen or America, that is just totally foreign because every Bible is totally different. And they say, well, this edition says this and this edition says this. What do you think is better? You know, these are black and white questions. What does it say in the original? But what does that connect? Because unfortunately, God and the Bible, and the ramification is the role of Am Yisrael is so little compared to what it should be in Christianity and in the Western world. Because even though you would think that a Western-based culture, which is based on the Bible, should understand the importance of Am Yisrael and the Hebrew language and Jerusalem, and they do to a certain extent, but a lot less than they should. And one of the reasons is where Rav Kook is going to say here, because when they're getting to these ideals on their own, not through Am Yisrael, not through Hashem Elokei Yisrael, not through the Jewish Bible, then God is hidden. And they're missing out on a lot of things because of that. And that's one of the disadvantages of letting them do it on their own. Okay?
Interesting to Dafkan has lost the last war. We saw a lot of pro-Christian groups coming out and saying Israel is a place where the Jewish people need to be and we have to make sure that the people know they are safe and sending missions over. And really, through this milchama, a lot of word got out of exactly Israel's place in world history and how they have to be there and support.
Yafeh. That's a good example. Rav Kook is saying that through milchamot, through this idea of the Muslim world attacking the Jewish world and the Christians, for example, like you said, siding with us, that is going to have big advantages in terms of them seeing God and the Tanakh and, you know, doing it a little quicker than just letting them go at their own pace. Okay? Let's see it inside. Pitchei ha'olam ha'klali הם מקבלים יסוד השלמתם ונשיאות ראשה משערי צדק המיוחדים של כנסת ישראל. מקום בית המקדש, שמשם האורה יוצאת לעולם. Right, there's a big difference whether the world is going to understand the godly ideals through Am Yisrael, through Sha'arei Tzedek, through the spectacles of Judaism, of the Jewish nation. Im haya mutal Yisrael la'achriya ta'olam l'shichlulo ha'amiti al-yidei sara u'gvurat milchama. If we were to drag the world up through more Jewish nationalism, lichtov al digla Hashem gibor milchama, that's the first pasuk, Hashem gibor milchama, that's the vehinasu, that we are opening up the gates to the world. Okay? Hayu pitchei olam mitnasim. It would be artificial. It would be... Whenever you have a tutor coming in, a teacher coming in, it's not me who's getting to these ideals on my own. And that's b'di'evid.
Well, that's what Rav Kook's doing to us now.
So Rav Kook says that a person has to learn everything, and through learning everything, he finds his letter in the Torah, which, according to Rav Kook, is all the letters. But different people have different... minunim, different percentages of different letters. Lo bekoach atzmi lahem, ki im bekoach dechifa, misha'arim hamyuchadim ha-yisraelim. Right? Again, through talking more about the Bible, through talking more about talit and tefillin and Jewish history, and again, it's b'di'evid. There are good advantages of it, and like Avi already pointed out, the last century has clearly seen both. Right? Balfour, for example, was very strong on the Jewish homeland for the Jewish people. Right? Halavad, the Jews today, when they're talking about Se'if Halu'um, you know, that everyone's talking about, Halavad, that the Jews should be as gung-ho as Balfour was regarding the Jewish role. Al ken, betchila amar se'u she'arim roshechem. That's the first pasuk. Klomar, atem ha-she'arim ha-miyuchadim lekoach ha-yisraeli ha-ruchani tiyu ha-poalim ha-nosim rosh be-kocham ha-atzmi. Ze kocham le-elokei Yisrael. We're running out of time. Let's skip to the next sentence. Aval, kasher ze ha-derech niznach ve-lo nirtze me-et Hashem ha-bocher b'tzion ve-kara shmo Hashem shalom be-kiryat Shalem, right? One of the nicknames of Yerushalayim is Shalom, peace. Malchitzedek Melech Shalem, completeness. Not necessarily through Jewish nationalism. Remember, we've learned in the past, Yerushalayim is also the Jewish national capital, but it's also the international capital. If we're going in the international gear, Hinei Nishar Lichora Rak Derech HaMetinut, we're going to need a lot of patience. Ve'ushi Yisrael yifrach b'kocho ha'atzmi, yitgaber b'shem Hashem lokav, u'b'emshech hazman yachteru karnei ha'orah kol goy ha'aretz, u'b'kuach b'chira atzmit, yaskimu gam pitkei olam laset rosh. Right? Eventually, everyone agrees that in the end, the Gentiles and the nations of the world, they will agree with the godly ideals of the Tanakh, of the 13 Midot, and everything that we're always speaking about, they will get there out of choice. The question is, how much are we going to have to tutor them to get there? Litromem el matara na'ala kedosha, dat Hashem elokei olam anoheg b'chasdo kol dor. Maybe we'll skip down. Rav Kook then talks about the third difference. In the meantime, we've spoken about two differences between the two psukim. One, usu'u pitchei olam, as opposed to vehinasu, right? We're talking about the more universal gear, right? Where the godly ideals open up the gates to the world through them, and the God, the honorable God, he will get there. He will appear eventually, but it's going to be more slowly than through the Hashem Izuz v'Gibor of the more national Geula of the first Pasuk. Mi hu ze melech ha-kavod? Here also, Rav Kook, what's the difference between mi ze and mi hu ze? Mi ze, in the previous option, That is Am Yisrael speaking. Who is this God talking this? Because Am Yisrael sees God day in, day out. Ze Eliva Anvehu. We saw him in Egypt, we saw him in Jewish history, we saw him in the Six-Day War, we saw him in Tel Aviv, we see him all the time, right? He's our father, he's around. That's the Mize Melech HaKavod in the previous pasuk. If we're taking the universal approach, Mi Hu Ze Melech, right? Who is third person, right? God is further removed, and that is the problem, one of the problems of the universal track, where the God and the God of Israel and the God of history and the God of the Tanakh is more hidden. It's mi huze as opposed to mize. Okay? And the third difference, Hashem Tzvaot, hu melech hakavod tzela. This is the advantage of the universal track, where Tzvaot literally mean host. And in the writings of Rav Kook, and here also, he uses it as a variety. There, the world is based on variety. Shleimut, completion, shalom, is based on variety. As we've seen many times, we're not interested in there not being women. We want womanhood, we want manhood. There's beauty in both. We want the French culture and the good of the English culture and the good of every culture, even German culture, has something good. We don't want to lose that goodness. That is what's called tzvaot. Tzvaot is the hosts, the many, the rabim, the different shades of the rainbow, right? That American culture and Russian culture and French culture, and I'm sure there's something good in Catholicism, there's something good in Protestantism, there must be something good in Islam, there's something good in everything. That is the advantage of the Tzvaot, which is more varied, as opposed to Hashem Izuz V'Gibor, Hashem Gibor Milchama, in the more Israeli national track. In the end, just to summarize, in the end, the tracks aren't going to be that different because they're going to be a merger of the two. The question is it going to be 60-40 or 40-60 or 70-30 or 30-70? And as we've seen over the last century, it really is going in both directions, where the world still needs Am Yisrael. The world without Am Yisrael is lacking direction. We spoke about this two or three piskot ago, where the post national world, the post-Christian world, they can't stand up. They don't have an ice cube's chance in hell of standing up against Islam, because Islam has the fervor of nationalism and the fervor of religion, and Western people, they're just giving in, you know. Pluralism, where one is fighting and the other isn't fighting, it's not a question who's going to win in the end. And that's why the world is going to need Am Yisrael to take the place of the Western world. And yeah, we also can, we have our nationalism, and we have our religion, and our Tanakh, and our history, and, you know, the Western world, they think that the Muslims are, it's an ancient religion, you know, because America is just around 200 years. The Muslims, they've been around 1,300 years. For us, that's nothing. You know, we're almost 4,000 years old. And anything that Islam has, we have, and a lot more. And it's true that the Mesirut Nefesh that is found, that is lacking a little in secular Israel, is getting stronger and stronger. Pashut, the religious Zionist community is taking over where the kibbutzim are lacking off. In other words, we don't have to worry. You know, we have to consciously develop it and everything, but we have the answer. But again, why do I mention this again? Because that Israeli nationalism is necessary. The world is a little too wimpy. American democracy is a little, they're too wimpy. They're not defending themselves. They're not standing up for the democratic ideals that they should be fighting for are really, come from the Torah. And like we said, they could have gotten there better and stronger. And like we said, there are advantages of them getting there as much on their own without us, or with us as little as possible. There is free will involved. You know, the goyim have free will. We also have free will, and that's what the graph, whether it's going to look like this or look like this or look like this and how long it's going to take. But just to summarize, there are advantages in both tracks. In the track where Jewish nationalism plays more of a role, and in the track where Jewish nationalism plays less of a role, in both it's necessary. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send us that which the track which we choose according to the percentages that the world chooses. There's a lot of current events here. Obviously, Rav Kook is writing this as a... He doesn't read today's newspapers. He's writing this 80, 90 years ago. Nevertheless, there's a lot of current events here that we can learn from.